come up on a tight wire.
I'm Daniel Chacon. Welcome to another edition of Words on a Wire. Today, my guest is humor writer Andy Selzberg, a former writer for The Onion, which, as you know, is one of the funniest newspapers out there. And he just came out with a new book called The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. Let's see, how can I describe this book? Let me give you an example of what this book contains. It has suggestions, things to make you think. And I'll give you an example. There's this one thing where it says, suggest 15 endings for the sentence, this is the year I blank, exclamation point. And what you're supposed to do is kind of consider what would be the 15 ways you could end that sentence. And so, for example, if I were to do it, I might say, this is the year I sell the movie rights to my novel. Or, this is the year I win the Pulitzer Prize. This is the year I finish my book of poems and see it find an awesome publisher and see that win the Pulitzer Prize, the National Book Award, and another award, which would be for about $1 million. This is the year I would see Words on a Wire become nationally syndicated. This is the year I see the first draft of my new book on humor. As you can see, everything I listed is centered around my writing. That's how I'm treating the thought experiment because I'm so obsessed with my own writing career. But you don't have to treat it that way. You can actually just give absurd answers. For example, this is the year I discovered that I am a descendant of elephants and that I am, in fact, Prince of the Elephants, and I could take my throne anytime. Pack my trunk. I'm going to Africa. Anyway, I suppose that I would have to discover whether or not I'm an Indian elephant or an African elephant. But I do actually have an inner elephant. You know how people say they have like these spirit guides or they identify with a particular animal like a fox or a hawk or a roadrunner? I think my spirit animal is an elephant. Anyway, you can say, this is the year I find a wormhole into the multiverse. This is the year that I discover my girlfriend is actually an agent of the FBI sent to spy on me, willing to compromise her chastity for such an effort. But in pretending to be my girlfriend, she falls in love with me, quits her job, and becomes a florist. This is the year I learn how to pronounce Massachusetts and Jack Kerouac. Massachusetts. My producer, Nora Martinez, says I mispronounce it. I say Massachusetts, but it's apparently Maskatuskis or something like that. Anyway, this year I'm going to learn how to pronounce that. In other words, this book, The Jottery, contains an infinite amount of possibilities. You could use them as writing exercises, or you could use them to enter an absurd, crazy part of your imagination. And after reading it, you might even make up your own thought experiments. Here's one. Imagine you wrote a book, published it, but nobody bought it. Wait a minute. That's actually not a thought experiment. That's my biography. Okay, how about this one? You've heard of a bucket list, the things you would want to do before you die? List 10 things that you have no desire to do before you die. Stick around. We're going to talk to Andy Selzberg, author of The Jottery. Andy Selzberg is a former staff writer for The Onion, and his writing has appeared in The New York Times, GQ, The Village Voice, Salon, The Oxford American, and The Believer, among others. He is author of You Are Good at Things and Dear Old Love. And today we're going to talk about his latest book, The Jottery. Welcome to Words on a Wire. The Jottery, this is probably one of the most interesting books that came across my proverbial desk in a long time. You know, and I don't even want to try to explain the concept, so I'm going to let you do that, and then we'll look at some of the excerpts.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, I feel like that's one of the problems with it, that it doesn't neatly fit into any genre. But I usually try and describe it as a cross between Deep Thoughts by Jack Handy
oh, yes.
And sort of the Book of Questions.
By Neruda?
Or the Zen Companion uh-huh. kind of thing. You know, you can just sort of read it through and chuckle at them, or you could use them as writing class prompts or just sit on a bench thinking prompts. I tested it out in my class yesterday and it actually works. I'll just throw them out there. What are 10 arguments you never want to have again? And they would all sort of shout out answers like it was a parlor game.
How would you describe what these are? You call it The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. And they're Let me just give a random example of one of them. Suggest fresh lottery or slot machine themes, for example, movie remake Defender, online purchase returner. Short little suggestions and what you call thought experiments like that. Now, how did this book come about? Why did this book come about?
I'm a writing teacher, and I used to do stand-up comedy, and I've always been compelled by one-liners. And I like funny ones, but also I like the cosmic ones, and so this is a combination of that. Oh, and I like giving assignments, but I don't like grading assignments. I don't think any teachers do, right? Nobody's like, I got into it not because I like being in front of a class, but because I like just plowing through stacks and stacks of papers and putting little comments on the side that are not going to be read. So there's a way to sort of put assignments out there that you don't have to worry about being assessed.
Right.
The answers don't have to make sense. Like, it's sort of to put your mind in another space.
Right. You know, you have this one question in here. It says, list the kind of transportation. I'm paraphrasing the kind of transportation that will exist in the 3000s. And then you make a parenthetical comment. If it is the 3000s when you're reading this, listen to what it would be like in the 4000s. And I really like that because I think this is the kind of book that could have a long shelf life. It's something you'd want to keep around. And at the risk of sounding offensive, I don't mean this in an offensive way. It'd be a good bathroom book.
I hope so. No, that would be, I'll take it.
Yeah, like, what are some objects or concepts that can be improved with stripes on the side? That really kind of, causes you to use the imagination. I'm a creative writing teacher, as you know. I work in the MFA program here at the University of Texas in El Paso. And some of these exercises would really cause the students to think beyond the ordinary, to really go into imaginative spaces, which I think a lot of students have trouble doing. And one of your exercises, for example, what 14 things should be in a classic junk drawer? There's more, but let me comment on that. First, I have a colleague who in his fiction writing class asks students to think of a character and to write what would be in their refrigerator. And this is kind of that type of ability to talk about a character by what they have in the junk drawer, but you give us a bonus. What should be in a postmodern, non-classic junk drawer, which allows them to go a little bit beyond just the ordinary imagination?
Right. Like, you can get into the world with that first one. You're thinking, okay, there has to be a flashlight with non-working batteries. If the batteries work, you should take them out and put in non-working batteries for the classic junk drawer. There should probably be a bottle opener, some rubber bands that have lost their elasticity, a glasses screwdriver, maybe.
And if it's the 3000s, probably a pile of old iPhones.
Yes. No, that's unfortunately in my junk drawer now.
Right. As a writer, I just really found these experiments a lot of fun. Again, I think they help you access parts of the imagination that you're not used to using in ordinary thought. And you have one that I kind of played with on my way over here just to see what I'd come up with. And this is, what are 8 heretofore unimaginable toaster pastry fillings? I have the 8, and I want to read them to you. It was a lot of fun just thinking about these. Okay, unimaginable toaster pastry fillings, like a Hot Pocket or something like
sure.
that. Okay, overripe banana slime, liver paste, cheese puff saliva from a teenager's mouth, basil and bacon, that might actually be a good one, pickle with toenails, Velveeta cheese and peanut butter, honey and sriracha, cocaine.
Cocaine's a good one. I did try and do that one. I just wrote hashtags.
Oh, really? Hashtags.
I went a little bit more abstract.
I'm wondering, I believe you are a stand-up comedian. Are you still doing stand-up comedy?
I'm not. School has replaced that, having this captive audience.
Right, right.
That I can stand in front of and try out my material on.
What if, for example, a stand-up comic were to read some of these questions and come up with answers and use that as part of their material? Would you feel kind of cheated?
No. I like to do stuff that I hope does inspire something, whether it's something like a stand-up. And some of the questions are really practical, like what are 10 uses for abandoned big box store locations.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I would hope somebody thinks of something really cool for that. They're like, oh, yeah. Like, some of them are needs that have to be met, as well as other sort of weirdly metaphysical spaces, maybe questions that can't even be answered. So, no, I definitely, like, the purpose of this book is not, like, no, this all has to be contained here.
Right, right.
That it inspires something else. And I would think it would, maybe a companion wouldn't actually read them, but it could inspire stories, I would hope, for students or real, quote-unquote, writers. Because we're always giving ourselves assignments, right? Like, if you're a student, you get assignments. But then if you're a writer, you're giving yourself assignments.
Right, right.
And even ones that I initially thought were hard, once I sit down and try and do them, I'm like, oh, these are good. And this actually could be the beginning of a story. One of them is someone tells you veterinarians have bad taste in pizza. Counter with four more questionable occupation-based axioms. And I was trying to do them, and I was like, oh, these would actually make funny story beginnings. I was thinking, like, electricians are wary of soup, or all doctors make greasy popcorn. And, like, you could just think of these, and they sort of already start painting a picture of a way of looking at the world. But I provide this sort of, you know, scaffolding, and then you can just go from there.
I think it would really be a good way to mine jokes. And as you said, it's not like they're going to go up there and read the list. It's going to just generate original thought. But also, there a lot of these are, for lack of better words, thought experiments that might actually lead to some very serious insight into self-awareness or into reality. And I'll give you an example. All yourselves, past, present, future, possible, impossible, end up meeting naked in a sauna. What do you all talk about? What do you pointedly not talk about? Is anyone ashamed about what?
I love that one. I have never attempted to answer it, but I just love the image that it conjures.
Well, it will certainly cause you to think about, you know, the various stages of your life. And I think one of the inevitable points of maturity is imagining the ability to go back where you are now and to talk to an earlier self. And then when you imagine that, you can't help but to imagine what would a later self want to say to you. And really, it causes you to think a lot about your life. It could lead to deep insight.
Right. Like, I think you could just joke with it, or, yes, you could, like, okay, I'm going to use this in a therapeutic sense. It could be used in therapy, or somebody suggested this would be a cool presidential debate question.
And also, it reminds me of this story called, the name of the story escapes me, but it's by Jorge Luis Borges. And he's a young man in a park in Geneva, and he's sitting next to an older man, and an older blind man, and the older blind man is humming. And he's humming a song that the young man knows very well and means a lot to him. And he realizes he's looking at an older version of himself. And they start a conversation, and the old man advises the young man, and the young man advises the old man. But it's really a fantastic story. And this kind of idea, especially where you go beyond just, you know, younger, older version, but also imaginary versions or impossible
right.
versions. You know, I couldn't help but think of the Gedanken experiment of quantum mechanics and even of classical physics, where, you know, you kind of, you know, do these thought experiments about what would happen if. And a lot of them kind of, you know, really lead you to realities that are, you know, you can't just grasp in an ordinary world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So one of the things I really was hoping that, I want this to be an app. Like, I like to leave it being in at least an ebook, but also an app, because everything I do on my phone, even though this is this wonderful, amazing piece of technology, these devices, I'm always like, bro, looking at the New York Times or Twitter, something new, but it's still sort of like this. I'm looking at one-liners from people or browsing at J.Crew or something. And it's just like, well, I want more apps that are like, take me to these, like you're talking about, these kind of impossible spaces.
Right,
like,
right.
Oh, like all the other, you know, artistic media is like, well, these are impossible things. And for dreaming, it's like, oh, we have this amazing thing, but we're just using it for such, like, I'm like, oh, I'm doing all the same stuff I was doing before, but just in a slightly more computerized way.
Right. Know? That would be an interesting app. You teach composition at, I think, a college in Manhattan. I don't know if you're still at John Jay College.
Yeah.
I think it's called.
Yeah. I am actually physically there right now.
You wrote an article in the New York Times that I think is just brilliant. You're talking about how you've been teaching college freshmen for years, and you teach the five-paragraph essay, and you say, quote, the bully of a cousin, the research paper. And you suggest in this article that maybe in classes like that, freshman composition, at least maybe the first time students take an English composition class, that you should teach more Twitter-based assignments. Can you talk a little bit about that idea? Because I think it's actually a great idea.
Yeah, well, I'm always, like, fortunately, there's room, I don't know, an hour and 50 minutes is so long. So almost every day I'll do something, like, lately I've been giving them these questions or a lot of list assignments. So something where it's just take something like there's that website, How About We, and you suggest a date, mm-hmm. right? Like, how about we go see the Avengers movie and throw popcorn at the screen? So I explain to them, okay, like, writing is a really important skill because you have to, like, paint this picture of that not only you're smart and can, like, wield the language correctly, but that you have a sense of humor and a sense of where you live and gives them, you know, what you like. And you have to do it in one short sentence. You can't just say, how about we go to dinner? How about we watch a movie? I would love to just have the class just be things like that, but I sort of put those alongside the things I'm required to do. But, yeah, using these real world things, it's like, no, like, you have to use writing to find a mate.
That would be a good assignment. You know, what would your description of yourself be on Match.com or something?
Mm-hmm. And actually, like, you don't have to put it up there. Like, this is just a writing exercise.
And, you know, it might actually prepare most college students for, you know, the real world of writing. Because, I mean, ever since the digital age and the age of information, you know, writing has become, it requires a lot more pith than it used to. The five-paragraph essay is probably not going to be very relevant to most students unless they are going into some sort of scholarly field. But to assign them Twitter, for example, express an opinion in Twitter and having to use 140 characters, you know, really teaches them how to communicate in the world that they're going to be out there in.
It does. And obviously you can't do, like, I'm making the point, I'm like, this isn't, like, you can't do everything in this sort of a space, but it is something.
Right.
You know, you don't want to just ignore it and say, like, this is worthless. It's like, no, it is a skill, and it is more and more important. I think, like, captions, like, you know, contextualizing photos.
You know, and I'm teaching, I teach in a graduate program here at UTEP, and I teach in a humor class this semester. And
oh, really? Yeah. Creating or studying?
We're creating, yeah. I gave them assignments like do 10 minutes of stand-up comedy, write a sitcom, cold opening, you know, things like that. And the ultimate project is either 20 minutes of stand-up comedy or a sitcom pilot. But, we're studying various comedians and we're, you know, various books on craft. One of the things that is becoming increasingly clear to the students is that if you are a comedian, you have a Twitter account and you post, mm-hmm. you know, one to several jokes a day. And I'm thinking of, you know, comedians like Megan Anram, who writes for Parks and Recreation, mm-hmm. I guess, who basically created a following through her Twitter jokes. And Twitter seems to get more and more important. And I know you have a Twitter account. I follow you on Twitter. And you put jokes on there. But you also, I noticed, put some of the questions from the book. And it makes me wonder, when you were writing this, as you were writing, think, well, this is a good Twitter one, and kind of pare it down accordingly?
Not really. But it's the same kind of sensibility where some of them are supposed to be laugh out loud funny jokes, but some of them are supposed to be
right.
Whoa, man, like these sort of ideas. I like the idea of quoting your own Twitter. I find myself doing that in real life. Well, as it says on my Twitter feed, you know I wrote about a punchline is not a joke, is how I would teach my comedy class. I like the idea of teaching a comedy class in just a really militant, laughless way.
Uh-huh.
Like, you will come up with 10 minutes, and just like, you don't. You just teach very seriously as though you're kind of a drill sergeant.
It's good mining for jokes. It's good mining for humor. But also, like I said, there are some of these that reach this kind of ability for awareness or ability for to reach some sort of reality beyond, to use a kind of cliche term, beyond the veil. And I love this one on page 198. It says, list everything you love about nothingness. What do you say when you want to get nothingness out of bed the next morning? But that whole idea of nothingness is really interesting.
Yeah. No, it keeps folding back on itself because there's another one in there. Like, you know, you've gotten past desire. Now what do you want?
Oh, that's,
you can't say,
fantastic.
Like, well, you can't say nothing because, like, well, wanting nothing is still wanting something.
You said on your Amazon page, ever since junior high, I wanted to be a writer of novels or of novelty books. I landed on novelty books. They are the noblest calling. Tell us about, what are novelty books exactly?
Yeah, I spend a lot of time sweating over that bio, and I'm like, really? I mean, obviously it's a joke. They're not the noblest.
Right, right.
That, I hope I'm being sarcastic there.
Right.
But, well, yeah, like I say, like deep thoughts. Any long checklist book, like there's a, that 14,000 Things to Be Happy About was always a, like that one doesn't have much of a sense of humor or irony, but has been kind of a model just like sustaining this exercise for so long.
And you actually have a previous book of lists. I think it's called Things That I'm Good At.
You Are Good At Things.
You Are Good At Things. Yeah, that's kind of an interesting book. I saw the book trailer about that, and people are saying what they're good at. Like one of them says, I'm good at remembering the allergies of my friends, and she's holding a plate of cookies, and then somebody tries to grab the cookies. She goes, nope, there's nuts in it, and pulls it away.
I'm terrible at that.
So that was an interesting concept. How did that book do? How was that one received?
I mean, it was received pretty well. I was just looking through it, like yesterday I pulled it down. I'm like, wow, these are so funny. Like, how is this not like a touchstone and be like these other ones I'm naming, like 14,000 Things. Like, this is, it's this, but it's more so because that's the irony.
Right.
You Are Good At Things. Right. Like, it's supposed to be skills that don't pay the bills. Like, you are good at popping that shoulder back into place or peeing in a public bathroom where other people are present.
Oh, which by the way, I'm not good at.
No, it's terrible. Yes.
You say you think of yourself as an aphorist.
Right. No, that was not too more serious than I should be. No, I look at my Twitter account, like, not in a deadly serious way, but I feel like I can, like, these, the jottery that a story is being told in a short space. And same with this website, Dear Old Love, that became a book. And I was tightly editing things, and the idea was that, well, you were not really writing a note to an old love, but you're telling the story that's just compressed to one line.
I wonder how much of this attraction to aphorisms and to these, you know, short passages in books have to do with, I guess, a sort of zeitgeist that's happening right now among even fiction writers, where they're writing these really incredibly short chapters. There's even one writer, I forget his name, who came out with a novel based on Yelp entries. You know, and I'm wondering, because you had, you know, early ambitions to be a novelist, I'm not quite sure if you still do. Have you ever thought of writing a novel in just aphorisms?
Well, I want to do something. I want the next book to have more words in it, but I try that. But it's hard to get it to hang together.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not good at tension. It's hard to make people make mistakes,
right,
you know, and to get them into trouble. I can't do that. And there are a lot of things that I have trouble with as far as writing a novel goes, but I'm intrigued by those. It's hard to come up with something that'll be funny for a whole book. You know, agents always tell writers one of their rejections. I was like, well, that would make a great article, but maybe not a book. But also, I feel like the next level is, I feel like that would make a great tweet, but not a good article or a good
book. Right.
Well, what is this thing? Is this 1,000 aphorisms, or is it one, or is it a book? But yeah, I like that idea of like, wow, could this be a Yelp review? Like, could you stretch it out to a novel form? Or like, that was that Dear American Airlines, that novel a few years ago, where it was the form of a letter of complaint to American Airlines, but
just
expanded up into a novel. So I like that idea.
I don't know if you ever heard of the poet Joe Winderoth, but he has a book called Letters to Wendy's. And
yes, we share an agent, actually.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It's a fantastic book, and it's just basically this crazy guy who, you know, is filling out these letters to Wendy's and really taking them very seriously, and his narrative and his character emerges as he goes.
Yes. No, I love that. It's kind of dirty and absurd and funny. Yeah. No, it's just a combination of, culture and sweetness. I don't have it in front of me, but I do have it at my house.
I'm talking to Andy Selzberg, author of The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. If our listeners Google your name or find you on Twitter and follow you on your Twitter, you have a lot of content on there, they're going to find that you are often described as a former writer for The Onion. I wanted to ask you two questions about that. What was it like working for The Onion, and how does it feel? And all your bio, that's one of the first things they mentioned.
I'm so conflicted about it because it was 20 years ago at this point.
Wow.
But a publisher is not going to say, you know what, let's just leave this out because it's not important. And I sort of accept the fact that it just contextualizes it. It's just a way of saying, like, oh, this is funny. Like, even if you have a friend that's saying, well, it's like if you were at Upright Citizens Brigade, it was years ago, it's just a way of saying you, almost like you went to a certain college or something like that.
It identifies like, you with a particular genre of humor.
Right, right. So it's that, even though I always am like, oh, this has been so long, I wish I had a strong enough, like, quote, personal brand, where I could just like, no, I'm just me.
Well, this book seems to be getting some attention.
Thank you. I have no idea. Again, I always worry because it's not something like, oh, well, this is a novel. I'm looking for a new novel. And I don't know if I'm going to say, well, I'm looking for a book of kind of thought prompts that are funny, but also metaphysically strange. You know, like, it's a thing that doesn't quite fit neatly into any category.
Yeah, well, that's what I like about it. If I had to describe this book, I would be at a loss how to describe it. Maybe that could be one of the thought experiments. How would you describe
it
a book
right. How
like this?
That's why I think the, like, deep thoughts meets the book of Zen.
Yeah, yeah.
That meets the book of questions.
Have you done any of the experiments? 10 hotlines that don't exist but should? You know, like a suicide hotline?
Mm-hmm.
Or have you done any of these?
Yes. I've been doing it just recently. So not, like, and like I say in the introduction, like, if it says 12, you don't obviously,
right.
Like, nobody's grading you. You don't have to come up with 12. Right, like I was thinking of the repair or replace hotline. Like, let's say something is broken. Like, there's a hotline that says, like, oh, my shoes have a hole in it. Should I repair them or replace them? And you tell them, like, okay, here's what to do. Or the vague dread hotline. I'm not really depressed. You just have a sense of vague dread.
All
there's
right.
This number you call. The literary jealousy hotline.
Oh, yes, that would be a perfect one. Or my Amazon ranking suck hotline.
Amazon ranking stop, right. That, these would all be subsets of the literary jealousy hotline
family.
Probably. But yeah, just that would be an interesting. There would probably be a lot of big room of people answering these phones. People would fall in love. Yeah, I like that one, the hotline one. What new halls of fame do we need? What hotlines do we need?
Well, it's a really fantastic book. I'm talking to Andy Selzberg. The book is The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. And if you are a writer, and I know most of our listeners are writers or avid readers, pick up this book and play with some of the ideas. It might lead you to parts of the imagination you don't access every day. Andy, thank you for joining us on Words on a Wire.
Thank you for having me.
I'd like to thank my guest, Andy Selzberg, for joining us on Words on a Wire. Don't forget to pick up his book, The Jottery, Thought Experiments for Everyday Philosophers and Part-Time Geniuses. This would be a fun book to pull out with a bunch of writers, a bunch of creative people, and just have fun with it and start creating lists. And don't forget, you can even create your own thought experiments. I'm Daniel Chacon. Thank you for joining me. I'd like to thank our producer, Norma Martinez. And I'm going to end with a little thought experiment that is really kind of rooted in the experience here at Words on a Wire. The next book you read could save your what?
I'm up on the tie wire. One side's ice and one is fire. It's a circus game with you and me. I'm up on the tie rope. One side's hate and one is hope. But the top hat on my head is all you see.